As the Department of Agriculture, Agricultural Research Service, ARS, a research team leader at Ames, Iowa, and I hope we met before. And I know we've talked on the phone, we have a little project.
We spent a lot of time on the phone.
So I'm glad to meet you. If we haven't met, it seems like we have, though.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, Jerry's talk is soil plant interactions across space and time, but a snapshot, not a movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, a movie, not a snapshot.
Okay. There you go.
Well, thanks. Sorry to be late coming in. I had to start another session, and then I have to go back and give a talk in that session, so I'll disappear after this one again. Monday is a little hectic at these things these days. I do want to spend some time talking about space-time or soil-plant interactions across space and time, because it's a snapshot or a movie, and I'm just going to start this off by reminding everybody what we think the functions of soil are. And we want that soil to supply water, we want it to supply nutrients, we want it to be this structural support for the plant, and we want it to be this ecosystem for all the biological activities. But from an agronomic perspective, what we really want is to maximize production. We want that soil to maximize everything that we have out there and all the other attributes that are with it. And so we've spent a lot of time over the past few years looking at all of these interactions that go on across this this space-time continuum. It's really a lot of things have come into reality for us in terms of how do we really interpret this, because here's where I think that we have this expectation about a particular field and everything, and that is that here's our expectation. We have this the soil map, we have a topographic map, and whatever appears in that field is going to behave very nicely along with this predetermined map. So if we have these soils, this is what's going to be our response. And so we've spent a lot of time looking at this because of a very interesting customer. And a very interesting customer in all of this has been the whole crop insurance industry. And how do you really look at variation across the field relative to making insurance adjustments or making insurance practices work? And so they ask different questions about what really goes with on a field, and that's kind of launched a whole thought process in terms of how do we really look at this and what do we mean by patterns of variability and how do they respond throughout a whole season. And in doing this, what we really have come up with is this whole concept. And that's really when we look at an individual field or any part within a field, what it's really reflecting is the genetics by environment by management interactions. It's no longer the simple genetics by environment, but in reality, there's a management component that goes with this. And so we can put the different genetics in there. We have the environment, which includes our soils. It includes whatever precipitation or environmental regime we have with that. And then there's the management component. And this really becomes very evident when you move into the whole field-scale approach. And that is that producers often have the same genetics. They're exposed to the same different soils out there. They've been subjected to the same weather during the growing season. You get an entirely different yield off of those systems, which is a function of their management decisions throughout the year. And so you really see this reflected. And so it adds an additional complexity to all of this. And our previous speaker talking about space-time interactions, there's all this time factor. It is also dynamic in terms of how do we make certain decisions as we go on. So we've broken it into this aspect to give you a different way of beginning to think about just really what happens in the soil-planet continuum. And if we look at these spatial patterns within a field, this just happens to be one particular field that we've looked at. This happens to be EM38, the electrical conductivity. We have yield map data across that field that we've broken into the broad classes. And then we have reflectance data that we've collected with aircraft data, very high resolution pieces of this. You can see strips across these fields because we have imposed management practices within that in terms of changing nitrogen rates. But often what you see is what's reflected in there, no pun intended, in that reflectance data, you see often see lines within that that don't necessarily reflect themselves in yield, haven't reflected themselves in the electrical conductivity values, but do show up in terms of the plant growth that's out there. And so all of these things we've begun to marry together to say, really, what are the dynamics that are go on within a field throughout the year? What are they telling us about all these different things? But more importantly, what's the driving factor that's causing a lot of the responses that we're seeing? So if we look at this, and I just want to walk you through a scenario of what we've begun to see happen within fields. And this early part of the season here is really where we, in this particular field, we don't have much vegetative growth, so what you're really seeing is the soil background. You're seeing the light-colored soils, the dark-colored soils. As we go into mid-July, we see some of that disappearance. By the latter part of August, all of that variation within that field has gone away. And this is often what we see across the Midwest. And when you look across these fields, is that early in the season, we have all the soil reflectance or soil background data that's appearing as variation. As the crop begins to grow, that variation disappears, unless you have some catastrophic event, flooding, damage, or something like that that causes variation to continue to persist. But typically, by the time that we reach full cover in that field, all the variation has pretty well disappeared. And then we end up taking the same field later on, and you end up with differences in yield in all of this. And so that puzzled us for a long time, is exactly all of this dynamic. It is also what prevented us from developing very rigorous crop insurance protection in a lot of different things, because the dynamics of that field were beyond the control of the producer. They were beyond the control of the producer because they were really determined by soil water availability and soil water availability patterns within that field. And so that became a primary part of the environment that basically overwhelmed a lot of the management aspects of what was going on. So that began to make this much more of a movie than a snapshot about how this whole thing was behaving. And so it's really driven a lot of our thought processes and what was going on. And so what we see is the spatial patterns within a field are a function of the point in time during the growing season. And so any time that we drill down, we have to understand where we're at within the season. That plant response that we're seeing is really a function of the availability of soil water during the growing season. That's what's prompted a lot of our discussion about where the soils fit into this. And because the piece that you have to recognize is that this early season plant growth, and if we talk about corn, we talk about soybeans, we talk about wheat, a number of our crops, is that early season plant growth really requires a small amount of water compared to the grain filling period. So we can grow a crop to maximum leaf area, maximum vegetative expression, with very little water compared to what it takes to produce the grain out of that crop. And so a little bit of water stored within that profile, we can mask all of our differences that are going on. If we take a look at this, and this is one more example of this, this happens to be another field and flipped on its side. This happens to be some transects of data that we've collected again in all of this. And these data wouldn't be possible without cooperation of lots of very willing producers, because we stripe their fields with different nitrogen rates. We ask them to collect very high detailed yield monitor data. And then this bottom graph is actually reflectance data. We actually flew these fields 4 to 5 times during the growing season with very high resolution radiometers, in the order of 1 meter resolution on a radiometer. So there's a lot of detail. But what you see in this, imagine yourself as a bird flying down across that field and looking at it. Those bottom lines are what you would see if you flew over that field in the middle of July. You'd see very little variation as you flew down this row. You wouldn't see any of the soil background or anything else. You'd see that cover of that crop. But if you flew that same field again in early September, you'd see all these variations. That's that upper line that's out there. Because all of a sudden, what we're seeing in this field is the expression of the capability of that soil to hold water. And so what you're really seeing is a difference in this whole response in terms of what's going on in the dynamics of these particular fields. And so you see that, again, reflected back in the yield map that's out there. So all of these things are beginning to emerge, and we've spent a lot of time then looking at just how this all happens. And we've looked at it in this particular aspect using water use efficiency. It's a concept that we've used for a number of years in lots of different ways, in which we look at yields on the y-axis and any input across the x-axis. Typically, we're looking at water, but we can look at nutrients, we can look at light. We can adjust this curve a little bit up and down by management and a little bit back and forth by changing inputs. And so this gives you the concept, but let me give you some reality. And these are all data that have been collected across an individual field, multiple sites within that field, all with this high-resolution eddy correlation equipment, so that we can get some very detailed evapotranspiration data. We total that up over the whole growing season to get water use. And we actually have backed out the soil water evaporation component out of this so that we can actually just look at crop transpiration. And what you see that line across there, that's a fit through just the 150 kilogram data. That's the typical fertilizer rate that we use. And then there's a whole lot of data points within this field and among years in which we have very low water use efficiency. Is that basically we've invested water into that crop and we don't have a yield return. Some of it is a result of low fertilizer, some of it is a result of we put on really high rates of fertilizer, but in reality, what those are points of the soil that wasn't able to supply all the adequate water to produce that grain at the end of the season. So that's that spatial variation pattern that begins to emerge within that field during the growing season. And if we had that one more adequate rainfall during the grain filling season, you'd see an entirely different pattern that's going on. And since rainfall is becoming much more variable in the latter part of the growing season for the Midwest, these things are beginning to have more and more of an impact of why do we see yield variation and why do we see all these different pieces. And in fact, if you take and subdivide this field even more, the upper two lines happen to be a Webster soil, and the lower two lines are a Clarion soil. The Webster soil is a higher organic matter soil. It's about 5% organic matter. It's along the side slope in that. The Clarion is the upper part of the slope in the landscape. It's a lower organic matter soil, typically about 1% organic matter. You see the water use differences go from about 500 millimeters through the year to about 250 millimeters. Twice as much water used out of that Webster soil, more water available to it than in the Clarion soil. And you see that related back, if you think back to that yield curve out there, is that's all the differences in what we see in terms of yield response. And so we've looked at the patterns of growth, we've looked at a lot of these different pieces that are going on, trying to understand just how do we help producers understand these soil-plant-atmosphere interactions. A lot of it go back to this right here. It's a very simple relationship that originally came out of NRCS and Soil Conservation Service at that time, organic matter content within the soil and available water content capacity. And so you look at these different soils across the field. This is the available water to that, and you sum that up, and you begin to see why we have differences in plant expression and what is. But we also have extended this even farther. We've extended it farther in terms of looking at these interactions, and we just title this Good Soils Equal Good Yields. This is an analysis we just finished. The number on the x-axis is what we call the National Crop Commodity Productivity Index. Again, it's an index that's put together in the soils databases. The y-axis is county-level yields on soybeans, and we picked three states that we worked in. We worked in Kentucky, and we pulled about 38 counties out of Kentucky, 42 counties out of Iowa, and then we segregated Nebraska and just pulled the irrigated counties. on yields. And what you see is that the better the soil, the higher the NCCPI index, the better the soils are within the county. And so these are county-weighted average NCCPI values. And so we went through all the GIS data and pulled them out by soil type and everything else. The higher that NCCPI for a given county, the higher the yields that are out there, the higher mean yield for that. But if you irrigate, as we see in Nebraska, all of that goes away. And so water covers all of our problems in terms of what we see with soil variation out there, if you have the water available to you. But if you get into some very poor counties, as we see in Kentucky and even some of the double crop counties, is that we have a lower mean yield. But there's another important piece of this puzzle as well, and that is that your risk of crop failure or risk of not achieving that potential county yield changes with NCCPI as well. The poorer the soils within the county, the greater the risk in terms of crop failure if we don't have an adequate growing season. So all of these things begin to play in terms of how do we think about managing this crop. The other thing that we see when we bring this together, and that's what you see in a little bit of the remote sensing data that's out there, is that it's really about the duration of leaf area. When you look at these fields in terms of the response over time, what we see is the soil properties that allow that plant to have access to water, access to nutrients, that change the duration of the green leaf area, the higher the crop yield. And we've developed all sorts of different indices looking at this. This happens to be one on the x-axis there. It's a remote sensing index that is the plant senescence reflective index. It's basically the rate at which a plant senesces. And so we can look at that times the intercepted PAR, the photosynthetically active radiation that's incident on that, and we can begin to find that there's a linear relationship. This happens to be 2008, 9, and 10 corn. We've done other things in terms of cumulative PAR versus total biomass and just radiation use efficiency curve and in different systems out there. But the bottom line is any soil attribute which can increase late season vigor is going to increase yield because of the duration in green leaf area. And so it really becomes very important to us in terms of this, that these dynamics that occur during the senescence phase, we really haven't paid much attention to. We pay a lot of attention in terms of plant growth to the plant vegetative stage in terms of growing that plant, but we don't spend enough time in the senescence phase because that's really where a lot of the soil properties begin to express themselves. To give you an example of this, this happens to be a field that we've worked in extensively as well. This is a snapshot in early August. It is very, very uniform across that. The only thing you see in that is the waterways. And then you see that field in late August, and you see all this variation that's occurred within that field. The only thing that happened during that intervening three-week period is we didn't have any rain. And so everything was dependent upon what was stored in that soil profile. Those dark parts of the field averaged about 65 bushels per acre. Those light parts averaged about 25. So there was a decline of 40 bushels of production lost because it didn't rain for 3 weeks. That's how important this soil property becomes in terms of the late season vigor aspect. We've looked at other pieces of this puzzle to give you a different snapshot of all of these interactions. This is nitrogen rate versus yield of corn. This happens to be a county level or field level yields taken from different counties across Iowa. You can see that there's some yellow dots along the line. The more nitrogen we put on, the lower the yield. You want to buy that field because you're going to get a real return on your investment. We can explain that one. You get that upper line in which we actually do see an increase with fertilizer. And we've got a lot of cases on a field level basis in which we basically see no response to nitrogen. It's not that classic up and curve and economic optimum curve. And there's a lot of pieces of this puzzle that go together. And so we've spent a lot of time, again, looking at this puzzle as to why these things occur, what do they mean. But at the first glance, you can say this is very, very confusing because we don't understand these dynamics. This happens to be crop yield variation across the field. This is actually a Krieg map of yields across that. And you can see all sorts of patterns within that field. We go from very high yields in some white areas over 213 to the green areas, which were down at 130 bushels per acre in all of this. And we get even a little bit lower in a few spots that only went to about 120 bushels. It's not uncommon for us across fields to see a twofold difference, and sometimes a two-and-a-half-fold to three-fold difference in yields. The drought of 2012 showed farmers the value of good soils in terms of what they had for yields. And so these yield variation maps, as we look at it, it's more related to soils than it is nitrogen practices across that. This happens to be another Krieg map, which we've got low yields at one end of the field and high yields at another, where we've got poor fields and so or poor soils within that field, and these are expressed in kilograms per hectare as well. But what we've spent a lot of time looking at is why do these variations occur? Because there's no variation, no difference in the range of yield across three different nitrogen practices. There's a decreasing variation as we change nitrogen rate, which is interesting, but you get similar responses among different fields. And so we've looked at these and what they mean, but more importantly, it's when you begin to really mush the data together differently. These maps here is that we segregated out those same distributions by soils within that field. And what you find out is our lower organic matter soils that don't have the water are on the lower part of the yield curve. The higher organic matter soils with a higher water content are on the higher part of the yield curve. And then we've actually looked at yield or variation of leaf chlorophyll content to match with our aircraft data going across. This happens to be a point map in which we took a leaf chlorophyll meter and an individual with a GPS unit, and they basically measured five leaves at every one of those data points across the field, walking back and forth, so that we could look at that and saying, how much does leaf chlorophyll content relate to the nitrogen management practices that we put with that? And you can see a lot of cases when you look across there, you're looking across nitrogen rates that go from 70 to 150 kilos per hectare. And you're looking across different areas, you don't see any difference in leaf chlorophyll content. But then there are other parts of that field in different soils that you do see that difference. So these management practices we do often induce this variation, both in the short term as well as the long term. And we haven't talked about what crop residue does to changing the evaporation component and water availability. Erosion, in my opinion, is a reflection of management and what we have on that and how we protect that soil surface. You can see up and down that hill in terms of, and these are actually 2013 photos from Iowa this year in terms of the heavy rainfalls that we've had. We can also make changes in terms of intense tillage, in terms of drying that soil out, making all sorts of different changes. But in reality, when we start looking at these soils, we need to come back and think about the fact that we have a carbon-nitrogen water interaction going on, and all of these processes are happening within the soil surface. So when we understand this soil-plant nexus in a different way, I think we have to really begin to understand the linkage among the G by E by M components within the agronomic system. We're going to have to bring all those things together because we see differences in genetic responses across the fields as well. And we have to understand these spatial patterns across time and how those spatial patterns reflect some of our management decisions that are out there. Previous speaker, in terms of some of the geostatistical techniques, there's power in that, and we use those all the time, and they're going to give us new insights. But we also need to understand how this temporal variation in weather in the environment, both temperature and precipitation, affect the spatial patterns in this crop response as well. So that's why I say it's not a snapshot it's a movie, and how do we really look at this throughout a whole season? How do we interpret these signals to help us do a better job of being able to help producers manage, but also help us understand what the feedback is from some of our management decisions into productivity? So with that, thank you.